Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Welcome. It's Friday. Glad to have you tuned in. October 19 is the day. 73 days remaining till the end of this year, 2018. And this weekend might be a good time to wish upon a falling star. You know that old chorus, the Orionid. There we go, Orionid. Is that how you pronounce that, Paul? Orionid meteor shower. It's going to peak Sunday night. And astronomers say stargazers can see around 15 to 20 meteors an hour. Each meteor can travel around 148,000 miles an hour as they rocket through Earth's atmosphere. So, and if you like staying up late watching stars, you can see them go flashing by this weekend, perhaps. Right, so speaking of stars, we'll talk about some of what's going on in the movies and what the stars are doing in terms of letting their kids watch movies. Some interesting perspective. Adam Holtz joins us from Plugged In Movie Reviews. We'll talk about some of the current movies as well, some of what's playing. Noticing that in the Almanac, a couple of important or memorable, I guess, presentations were introduced in this date. 1939, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington premiered at New York City's Radio City Music Hall. 1959, The Miracle Worker opened on Broadway. That was Anne Bancroft playing the lead role of a teacher, Anne Sullivan. Remember that story? West Side Story premiered 1961 on this date. And the first Blockbuster store opened. So I guess it's appropriate that we talk movies and more with Adam Holtz coming up in just a few minutes. And then we'll also have a chance to meet Robert Woodson from the Woodson Center. He's the winner of the 2018 Wilberforce Award and has worked in urban D.C. for many years and has some great things to tell us about what renewal looks like and the importance of faith in the midst of all that. So that's all coming up here in the moments ahead. And also Eric Metaxas has some thoughts about widows in China on today's Breakpoint. So it's a great hour as always. Glad to have you part of our Friday morning. And we'll bring in Adam Holtz in just a minute. It's 8 after the hour on a Friday morning with Plugged In Movie Reviews. Adam Holtz on the line with us, a regular contributor to Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to the show, Adam. Nice to have you on.
Thanks for having me on, Neil.
Yeah, I look forward to reviewing a few movies with you. And one of the things you've written about or talked about, blogged recently, is just as we approach Halloween, I mean, it doesn't even need to get to Halloween anymore before it seems like theaters are filled with movies that are all about, just unpleasant, kind of let's scare us, let's get gory. What's the intrigue in all that?
You know, it's a really interesting question, and there's actually a new study out this week. A couple of researchers spent a couple of years trying to figure out, you know, what is the draw here? And I think the upshot is something like this, that when we are scared in a safe environment that we actually have control over, there is something empowering about that. That we get, not only do we get a rush from it, it actually gives us a sense of control, a sense that we don't have to be afflicted by everything else that's out there. So there's a really interesting psychological dimension to all of that. And researcher Margie Kerr, who is at the University of Pittsburgh, says fun, scary experiences could serve as in-the-moment recalibration of what registers as stressful and even provide a confidence boost. So it's an interesting look at why horror movies in particular and people going to haunted houses, you know, why that's something that people do. I personally, it doesn't do it for me. I've never been a big horror movie fan, but there are a lot of people out there who apparently do have that kind of experience because these horror movies make tens of millions of dollars every September and October.
Yeah, it's hard to comprehend. In fact, I think it's the Sunday's Parade magazine, Jamie Lee Curtis on there, and a headline something like, you know, everything good that's happened to me has come as a result of horror movies. And I thought, really? So, wow, that's a statement and a half. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It's just, I mean, it, I guess I wonder particularly as believers that, boy, that seems like we're diving into some pretty questionable waters when we're pursuing, you know, what is so often the fare on TV and the films this time of year.
Yeah, and I think that as believers, we do have an anchor point that enables us to have hope, enables us to have confidence, enables us to have faith, enables us to move into every day with a sense of purpose and knowing that no matter what happens, we have an eternal hope. And so I wonder if some of those who are drawn to the horror movie saying maybe that's not true. That's certainly not to say that no Christians see horror movies. I'm sure that quite a few do. But we have a genuine hope. We don't have a counterfeit hope that, you know, gets clad in everything the culture says should give us hope. But we have the genuine gospel to hang on to and to offer to other people.
Well, it was a house of horrors, and it's a reality. The Gosnell story, the trial of America's biggest serial killer. That's one of the movies that you've recently reviewed, and that sadly is not just make believe.
No, it's not, and it's a very sobering movie. It's not a feel good movie. I feel like it's an important story if this is an issue that you want to learn more about. Dr. Kermit Gosnell was an abortion doctor in inner city Philadelphia, and he practiced medicine there off and on over almost 40 years. I mean, as far back as 1972, and it came to light that he was delivering close to full-term babies and then killing them afterwards, you know, as an abortion provider. And so he was violating all sorts of Pennsylvania abortion laws, but interestingly, a little bit like Al Capone getting nailed on tax evasion charges, nobody really was trying to hold him accountable to this, but he also was selling prescription medication on the side, and so some investigators in Philadelphia, the FBI, the DEA all came together in a sting operation to try to nail him for selling prescription drugs, and in the process, they discovered these horrible, horrible things that were happening in his clinic, and a brave district attorney in Philadelphia put him on trial for murder, for the murder of a woman who died because of too much anesthesia and the live birth abortions of a number of babies. And so the movie sort of ends up feeling like an episode of CSI or SVU or something like that. But it gives us a pretty grim look at what this man had been doing for all of these years and the real-life trial that brought him to justice.
You know, we love our movies to have happy endings. I guess the fact that he was caught and convicted, maybe that's as happy as we can get on this.
Well, it is, and I think the interesting thing about this movie is it shows, you know, how absolutely red hot abortion is as a political topic, and that nobody wanted to touch this case. You know, there's one scene where somebody says, you know, this is going to be the first case of an abortion doctor in the United States, and it can't help but be politicized. But the district attorney and the attorneys who are prosecuting the case bravely press through that anyway. And so I think we get a picture of just how deeply this issue has impacted our culture and how hard it is in the mainstream to deal with it.
We're coming up 15 past the hour. We'll take a quick break and come back, talk more in a couple of minutes with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Reviews. And we'll let Adam take one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. All that just ahead. Seventeen past the hour on a Friday morning. We're talking movie reviews with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Reviews. And Adam has the right stuff to talk to us about First Man that's just out last week. Tell us a little bit about the story of Neil Armstrong.
Well, First Man stars Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong, and as the title implies, it's, you know, about the first man and first steps on the moon. And this is really a dramatic biopic that may give us some details about Neil Armstrong's life and everything it took to get there that we may not be aware of. You know, I think most of us know that the Apollo program was one that certainly was high profile. It was extraordinarily expensive. There were a number of accidents that killed astronauts and test flights and mishaps to get there. So there was a real human cost to, you know, the dream of getting to the moon. And the film really shows that. I mean, there are a couple scenes that are pretty jarringly violent here, and that's one of the bigger content concerns. And there's some language that gets worked into the mix as well. But we see not only Neil Armstrong's kind of quiet, everyday heroism, we see the heroism of his wife back home, his wife Janet, who has to hold the home front together as their daughter succumbs to cancer. And there's even a sense that, you know, maybe Neil Armstrong is even kind of on the run a little bit, and his wife is the one who is really the glue that holds the family together. And so, you know, there were some details in that I wasn't aware of at all. Obviously, Neil Armstrong is an iconic American figure and one small step for, you know, for mankind and all of that. And yet here we get a behind-the-scenes glimpse that, from what I understand, is fairly accurate.
How does it maybe compare? I mean, I know it seems like the reviewers that, you know, didn't lead very well over the weekend and lost.
Yeah.
It didn't come on as strong as they thought. But how does it compare with, like, you know, Tom Hanks and with Apollo 13 or The Right Stuff, some of those movies about the moon?
You know, it feels like a movie that is of a piece with Apollo 13 and The Right Stuff, in that we're given a glimpse of the space program and striving for this amazing goal, but the cost and the difficulty involved in it might be a notch grittier than either of those movies, although to be fair, I haven't seen either one in a long time, so I'm making that comparison based on memory, which isn't always the most reliable, but I think that if those were movies that were appealing to you, this one is going to be in the same ballpark, although it's always good to come to Plugged In and check out the specifics on what we have to say about this film and everything else that's in theaters this week.
Plugged In, PluggedInReviews.com?
PluggedIn.com.
PluggedIn.com. PluggedIn.com.
Yep.
I would encourage you to check that out just for all your, you know, movie options. One of the items that came up, and we could probably talk about a couple other movies too before time's up, but you mentioned that both Keira Knightley and Kristen Bell have decided that, you know, as actresses, there's some things that their daughters aren't allowed to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to help people know what's in movies so that they can make good decisions. But both of these actresses this week have come out against some classic Disney movies, of all things. Keira Knightley talked about how she won't let her daughter watch Cinderella, how, you know, she just feels like the depiction of damsels in distress needing rescuing by a man is really problematic. And Kristen Bell came out and said some broadly similar things about Sleeping Beauty. And I just think it's interesting it's interesting on a number of levels, but what I liked about the story was that here you have two high-profile actresses who are really talking about movies from a worldview perspective. Now, it may not be a Christian worldview. The values may not be exactly the same ones we would hold as Christians. But they're saying there are ideas in this movie that I don't want influencing my children's perspective on reality, and they're taking that seriously. And so even if we may not make those particular choices with those particular movies, they're illustrating the kind of discernment that we encourage parents to have. And I think the other parallel thing here is that it shows that even movies that you might not think traditionally would have big problems still may have some ideas in them that we need to take seriously. So you wouldn't think necessarily that Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella would be high on the list of movies that you would need to have concerns about, but they're raising some legitimate questions about the values and the ideas in these films. And so I think it's a really fascinating story.
It reminds us again that, I mean, ideas have influence, and film is a powerful medium, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
Although I guess you look, well, you know, do they let them watch other things, like, you know, getting back to Halloween kind of things? Is like, well,
right.
that seems like that should have, we should have some filters on that as well.
No, that's exactly right. And I think as parents, the challenge for us is to be engaged and to be consistent and really do our best to be looking at this entire spectrum of entertainment and asking the questions, what's out there and how might it be influencing our kids? And again, at PluggedIn.com, we really try to do that not only with movies, we also review music, television, video games, and books and what's out there so that parents can be equipped to make good decisions and to enter into conversations with their kids about all of this entertainment that is potentially influencing how they see the world.
Well, in the light that it was on October 19, the year 1985, the first Blockbuster store opened, do you have any recommendation for something that we could watch at home this weekend?
That is a great question. You know, new on video in the last couple of weeks, for the younger set, Hotel Transylvania 3 came out a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, it's kind of silly, and we get some vampire jokes, but it has some nice things to say about families, about fatherhood, about a father-daughter relationship. I thought it was actually kind of a sweet movie with, you know, a smattering of the kind of bathroom humor that you might expect to find there. And Solo, A Star Wars Story, came out about 3 weeks ago, and it has your typical Star Wars level of violence. But even though it got critically, it didn't do great, and it didn't do great at the box office, with that caveat about the violence in mind, I really enjoyed it personally. But then I'm a Star Wars fan, so that, you know, I'm probably biased in that direction.
I was just going to say, I mean, any chance you get to, you know, play with your lightsaber
exactly.
and wear the Darth Vader mask while you're watching? No, I'm sure. Plugged In Reviews, PluggedIn.com is the place to go. Adam Holtz is with us on a regular basis here on Fridays to review with us. Adam, I always appreciate you coming on and giving us your insight.
Thank you, Neil. I always enjoy being on.
25 past the hour, and coming up here in the next 10 minutes, we're going to meet Robert Woodson, who's the founder of a, it's an urban enterprise opportunity, a faith-based recovery program. We're going to find out about the Woodson Center and also find out about his passion. He received the 2018 Wilberforce Award from the Colson Center. And speaking of the Colson Center, we've got Breakpoint coming up in a minute. Eric Metaxas will remind us once again that ideas have consequences. So stick around for today's Breakpoint in a minute. All right, 31 past the hour here on a Friday morning. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner, who's on vacation. Not sure if he's vacationing in Nebraska. I don't think so. Nebraska's new tourism slogan, quite literally, might not be for everyone. The state's Tourism Commission previewed its new promotional campaign this week, highlighting the new slogan, Nebraska. Honestly, it's not for everyone. Tourism officials say the move was made upon revisiting the state's character and an acknowledgement that they can't offer something to everyone. And this replaces the old tagline of Nebraska Nice. State's new promotion will tell potential vacationers they should visit for outdoor recreation, natural beauty, and escape from the city and a connection to the West. So, anyway, Nebraska. Honestly, it's not for everyone. right. So I want to say thanks to all our friends listening in from Bismarck 89.1 or in Hartford 94.1 or if you're in Waterloo 93.1 FM or Madison 104.7 or Duluth Superior 90.5 or Minneapolis St. Paul 90.7, 97.5. Glad to have you listening in this morning. Grateful to have you on board, or maybe you're listening to the app. By the way, if you're new to Faith Radio, if you go to myfaithradio.com, you can request your free welcome packet today and get to know us a little better. We're going to get to know Robert Woodson, founder of the Woodson Center. He's been a lifelong advocate for troubled youth, and we'll hear his story in about 6-7 minutes right here on Faith Radio. It's 24 before the hour. Coming up in a moment, we'll meet Robert Woodson, find out about their important work and maybe some applications for us and how we care for those that are in need in our communities. Paul Coughlin was one of our guests yesterday. October is a bullying awareness month. It's a sad reality, a growing reality, and Paul has been with the Protectors for many years and talks about the importance of being the bystander, willing to stand up and to respond.
When we tell a target to push back, we're doing good stuff, don't get me wrong, but they often don't have it in them. They're just, they're like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz. They just want to click their heels 3 times and have it all go away. They really believe in superstition. When they pray about bullying, they pray for deliverance only. They don't pray for courage to stand up to the bully and things like that. So bystander intervention, it's absolutely essential that that bystander stand up for that target, because it can really, in many cases, be an issue of life and death. We know of cases, many across the United States, that if someone had just stood up for that poor target and said, leave him alone, that's wrong, stop it, that that person honestly could be alive today, because the power of the bystander is just simply amazing.
Good word from Paul Coughlin. They had a great conversation with him yesterday. You want to listen to that full interview, and you can find it when you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Faith Radio Mornings show page. I'm looking forward to meeting Robert Woodson, and we'll do that in just a minute. He's our next guest on Faith Radio Mornings.
In his book, The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis says, the present is the only time in which any duty can be done or any grace received. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. C.S. Lewis, in his eloquent way, is saying this: you have the present moment to do your responsibilities, to handle what's been given to you, and to experience the grace of God. You can't live in the future. You can't live in the past. You have right now. When it comes to raising teens, you may wish you were at a different point in life, that the kids were past this stage, but in reality, today is exactly what God has given you. What are you going to do with today? Mom and Dad, live in the moment.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Let me tell you a little bit about our next guest. Robert Woodson Sr. is a former civil rights activist, has headed the National Urban League Department of Criminal Justice, referred to by many as the godfather of the neighborhood empowerment movement, and more than 4 decades has had a special concern for the problems of youth, and particularly youth violence. He founded the Woodson Center in 1981, and it's a faith-based approach to training and technical assistance and more. And he is also was the recipient of the 2018 Wilberforce Award, and we're honored to have him with us on Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning, Robert. It's nice to have you on.
Good morning to you.
Tell me a little bit, maybe just about the Wilberforce Award from the Colson Center. What does that represent for you?
Well, it's the highest honor that I can think of, because it was interesting when I got the call that I had received the Colson Award. I had been deep in study of the Wilberforce movement to determine how a group of just 20 people, the Clackham Group, was able to change the whole culture of Great Britain to oppose slavery, because we need such a reformation in America today to save us from ourselves. And so I was at the time looking at what is it that promotes change within a culture, particularly as we confront the assault on our faith. And so I found that in reading about from John McTaxon, reading about the work of Wilberforce and his group. And so we are trying to determine how we can apply those principles today so that we can begin to change and redirect this nation away from its disasterly direction.
As we've mentioned, you've been noted by many as a real leader in the neighborhood empowerment movement. What does that look like today? What is that, and maybe how is it different than from a generation ago?
Okay. I'm a veteran of the civil rights movement. I led demonstrations in the 60s, but I left the movement when I realized that a lot of low-income blacks who suffered most did not benefit from the change. I was against forced busing for integration. I was against race-based affirmative action. I believed in Dr. King. And so that put me at odds with the other leadership. Dr. King said, what good does it do to have the right to live in a neighborhood of your choice or to eat in a restaurant of your choosing if you don't have the means to do that? And I felt that the civil rights movement only concentrated on barrier removal and not preparation for people. And so I began to work. The kind of black-on-black crime, the kind of despair, the out-of-wedlock births, a lot of people would lead you to believe that this was a legacy of America's racial past. It's just not true. The black community is often a moral barometer of the health of the nation. But in 1930 to 1940, when racial discrimination was the rule of law, when the unemployment rate in the black community during the Depression was 40%, we had the highest marriage rate of any group. Our churches held us together. Elderly people could walk safely in their community without fear of being assaulted. So that the issue, racial discrimination in our history has never been the cause of the kind of disorganization and violence and out of wedlock. This is just not true. And that's because since the war on poverty, it separated the family, was a real assault on the family. Government policies promoting welfare over fathers. You saw a disconnect between work and income. And as a consequence, the problems that we're witnessing today are direct result of not America's past, but our present policies from the 60s. So what we're doing at the Woodson Center is going back into those neighborhoods experiencing the problems and working with Christ-centered grassroots leaders who are demonstrating that they can apply these old values to a new vision and resurrect those communities. So we have stellar examples of transformation, redemption, and resurrection occurring in some of the highest crime communities by going to those communities and finding grassroots leaders that are remoralizing young people. For instance, we are in 14 schools. And there's no bullying in our schools, but we recruit young adults from the community who used to be predators, but through God's grace, they have been transformed. And once their character changes, their characteristic has an advantage of helping to direct challenge bullies by taking form of bullies and thus neutralizing those that are predatory.
Getting some great insight today from Robert Woodson, who is founder of the Woodson Center, and he is the recipient of the 2018 Wilberforce Award. We'll take a quick little break. I want to come back and talk more about maybe what you're most excited about or hopeful about or passionate about and the work going on today in that work of transformation and empowerment. We'll hear more just ahead here on Faith Radio Morning. Well, minutes before the top of the hour, talking today with Robert Woodson Sr., founder of the Woodson Center, Robert, I know you've worked in the area of criminal justice before. I'm wondering what part that plays in terms of maybe limiting renewal and recovery empowerment in urban neighborhoods.
It's a big problem. In fact, I'm in Las Vegas today because I have to speak at a program, one of the most exciting programs to help people in prisons to reenter society. John Ponder has a group last 10 years called Hope for Prisoners. He's an ex-offender himself. He came to Christ in prison, and he uses about 40% of his mentors are police officers, and they have about a 6% failure rate, which 94% of the people who come into his program from prison are reintegrated, reestablishing families. And so it's a phenomenal example of how low-income people and police can cooperate and how through the power of Christ, life can be restored for those who are at the real bottom.
Talk about your faith-based approach. You're working in areas like training and technical assistance. What does a faith-based approach look like in all the various areas that you're working at the Woodson Center?
Well, what's going to really transform, in other words, drug addiction cannot be treated as a sickness alone, because that's assumed. Once you say it's a sickness, you are exempt from personal responsibility. Drug addiction is irrational. If it wasn't, then why would you have physicians or drug counselors or PhDs who are drug addicts? So I believe a drug addiction is irrational. It just doesn't make sense. And therefore, an irrational problem needs an irrational remedy. And belief in Christ, I don't understand why it works, but it works. Hmm. And my grassroots leaders, their life is a living testimony that only through transformation and redemption can real change occur in their life. What people need is not a therapist when you're in crisis. They need a friend, a loving friend who can guide them through crisis. And so the majority of my leaders in these high-crime, drug-infested neighborhoods, the ones that are most successful, are guided by Christian principles, and they are followers of faith, and they lead others to that faith through their secular actions, not by just preaching people into transformation, but by demonstrating in their own life what a saved life looks like. As my group say, what people want today is that they don't want to hear a sermon, they want to see a sermon.
Robert, what are you most excited or hopeful about, maybe in terms of the work that you're doing right now? I mean, you've been at it since the 80s, but what's fueling your passion today?
What's in my passion today is the fact that we have 3,000 grassroots leaders in 39 states, and they are all different racial groups. Some of them live in trailer parks. Some of them Appalachian whites. They're black. They're Hispanics. That they are the true future of this country. And what I'm excited about is we are bringing together a coalition of these people that people on both extreme right and left say they represent. But we're going to give voice to those people who are directly suffering the consequence of living broken communities and living broken lives. But we are going to bring together the leaders of these groups that have demonstrated they have answers to the problems, and so that we can bring about perhaps plant the seeds of a new reformation today, where those that are at the bottom, who are broken, can be united in their strategies at redemption and transformation. We just need to mobilize supporters to join with us.
So what does that look like if we're in a urban or suburban or rural area? How do we become mobilized with the work that you're doing or other ministries like yours?
I'm working with a group called Safe Families for Children, and what we do is we organize about a half million children in the foster care system. 70% of the people in prisons have spent time in the foster care system. It is a place that is generating human trafficking. Kids are being trafficked who are locked in that system. We're working with Safe Families for Children to mobilize thousands of church members to actually open their homes and take in these children temporarily, and so that they can find alternatives to the foster care system. Just like another model would be the spontaneous work of the Cajun Navy, you know, the Cajuns, who just once there is a disaster, they just mobilize by the hundreds and spontaneously go into the communities and save lives. We want to generate that same kind of spontaneous outpouring of assistance where the first responders are neighbors helping neighbors. We want to return America to that tradition, and we are proud to serve as a catalyst for making that happen.
Robert Woodson, Sr., my guest these past few minutes from the Woodson Center. And as he said, thousands of men and women are leading about bringing about transformation in urban areas, empowering neighborhoods to be what God designed them to be in the first place. Robert, it's an honor to visit with you, and blessings to you as you speak in Vegas today.
Thank you.
Robert Woodson joining us here this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. And we'll wrap up today's program here in just a moment. Stay tuned. As Robert Woodson said, you know, it's not just about barrier removal. It's about empowerment and seeing transformation take place. I'll leave you with a quote from C.S. Lewis, who said, "We all want progress, but if you're on the wrong road, progress means doing an about turn and walking back to the right road. In that case, the man who turns back soonest is the most progressive." Love that quote from C.S. Lewis. Let you reflect on that today. You'll get some great Bible teaching coming up here in just a few minutes. Colin Smith will open up God's Word. It's Unlocking the Bible to open up a morning of great Bible teaching. The likes of Colin Smith and Chuck Swindoll and David Jeremiah and Greg Laurie and Chip Ingram, the morning, all the morning long. Great opportunities to get into God's Word and let God's Word get into you. That's what we're passionate about here at Faith Radio. It's not just information, but about transformation, connecting faith to life every day. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. I'll be back with you Monday morning, and then Peter returns from his vacation. Looking forward to connecting with you once again here on Faith Radio Mornings on the Faith Radio Network.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.